Good morning. Beautiful morning. We're all getting ready for Passover. And I just want to remind you that Passover is, though obviously preparing for a holiday and all the various elements of it, oh, there's some stress, but this is a time of our freedom, not the time of our emancipation. And so then don't feel like a slave to your holiday. Breathe, do something good for yourself. Don't overwhelm yourself with preparation for the holiday to the point where you go to the Seder and you end up at the Seder, a shmata, a dish rag. That's not the point of this holiday. Just wanted to say that. So what I thought I would do today is something I've never done before. I'm going to pretend that we are together on the first night of Passover at the Seder. And I'm going to just do some kind of monologue here of how I would open our Seder together and give some kind of meaning and purpose and idea. Let me just get started. So I want to welcome all of you, wish you a happy Passover. Tonight at the Seder, there's 15 steps. The first is reciting the Kiddush. The second is washing the hands. The 10th step is the festive meal, which we'll get to in about an hour, maybe give or take an hour. So I just want to let you know that this part of the program, without the food, I mean, we'll have a little vegetable in the middle, but without the food, it's going to be around an hour. There's parts of the Haggadah we're going to read out loud, others we're going to read quietly. I'll try to share some insights into some of it, but don't worry, we're going to arrive at step 10, so you can count the steps and then you're going to be able to eat. I know I don't want to get in between you and your food. So an elderly rabbi is on a plane did studying.
Oh, I can't do it without.
Sitting next to him is a professor of astrophysics. The professor turns to the rabbi and says, "I don't mean to be disrespectful, but a rabbi your age must have been studying Talmud for decades. Why do you need to study so much? I can summarize Judaism in a few words. Don't do unto others what you don't want done to you." The rabbi smiles and responds. He says, "You know, professor, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but why do you study so much? I could summarize all of astrophysics in a few words." "Really now? You can summarize all of astrophysics in a few words?" "Yes, I can. Twinkle, twinkle, little star." Tonight at the Seder, it summarizes the drama and the sweep of 3,000 years of Jewish history in the most remarkable way. Here's how. Many Jewish families throughout the world are blessed with children able to sit at the Seder alongside their grandparents. So often, the Seder spans three generations: grandparents, parents, and children. And being that the average generation gap today is around 30 years, so a typical Seder is going to span 60 years of Jewish history. However, when grandparents are present at the Seder, and they are able to share memories about the Seder they experienced as children and tell us stories about their grandparents and the stories their grandparents told them. First-hand accounts that stretch back an additional three generations because they too were once children sitting at the Seder of their grandparents. So we're stretching back an additional three generations of Jewish history. So that gives us, just at the Seder, 120 years of firsthand Jewish knowledge. But if we think about it, it's even longer. Because the children at the Seder, listening to the grandparents, tell stories about their grandparents, will one day tell these stories to their own grandchildren. So add another 90 years on top of the 120 years. And you're going to get 210 years of firsthand Jewish history linked to the Passover Seder. Just 15 such Seder tables will take us back some 3,300 years to the great night when the Israelites ate their matzah in Egypt, preparing for the Exodus. What an incredible thing for the link to remain unbroken over so much time. We're here tonight only because of the courage of successive generations of Jews, grandparents, Bubbies and Zadies, Safta and Sabas, who went through crusades, who went through inquisitions, expulsions, ghettos, pogroms, and even the Holocaust, and refused with every fiber of their being to surrender their Jewish identity. Tonight, we link our songs and prayers to all those generations of Jews who precede us in the vast symphony called the Passover Seder. Shehechianu v'kiyemanu v'higianu lizman hazeh. Beautiful passage that we say, thank you, dear God, for bringing us to this moment. As we read the Haggadah, we learn about our history and we transmit that experiential history through multi-sensory experiences. We transmit that to the next generation. But consider this. Given that Jews have such a long and remarkable history, it's all more surprising that Biblical Hebrew has no word for history. When modern Hebrew linguists needed a word for history, they were forced to borrow one from English, basically. They call it historia. It's a paradox. But one of the best ways to understand culture is to see which words are missing from its language. And maybe which words have many, many versions of this, of the same word. Right? Like French. Think about how many ways you can say love in French. So you understand a language and a culture by which words have many versions and which words are missing. For example, what's the word for civility in modern Hebrew? Guess what? You can't say it in Hebrew because there's no word for civility. Are you shocked? I'm not. They're still working on it. But we have a different word in Hebrew that is often found in place of civility, and it's chutzpah. How do you say chutzpah in English? Yeah, there's no word in English for chutzpah because it's not an English word. And chutzpah, you say chutzpah. That's what you say in English. So in English, we have 94 words for civility. 94 words for civility. But we can't come up with one word that comes close to chutzpah. I rest my case. So maybe we can understand why in Hebrew there's no civility. But why don't we have a word for history? I can't think of another word that's more important. I can't think of another word that has carried the Jewish people more than the word history. How much focus we have on the past, how much connection we have to the past. I mean, just think about it a second. For over 2,000 years, since we were exiled, since Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians forced us from that land, and later the Romans forced us from that land, ever since that moment, every single year, all over the world, on Passover night, tonight, there are Jewish people that will sit around, and at the end of their Seder, they're going to say, Neshana Haba'a B'Yerushalayim, with this beautiful prayer and with their heart and their feeling and their soul on fire next year in Jerusalem. That's the only wish. That was the only wish of my great-grandparents and my great-great-grandparents and my great-great-great-great-grandparents. They only dreamt of a day. They didn't only do it on Passover. Minimal was Passover because Passover is the most celebrated holiday. So almost all the Jewish people of the world did it on Passover. But people who were more observant did it three times a day. To this day, three times a day, they would pray facing Jerusalem. Wherever they were in the world. If they were in Australia, it was northwest. If they were in the United States or Canada, it was east. Wherever they were in the world, they faced Jerusalem. So why is there no word for history? Since it's such a part and parcel of our being, of our makeup, of who we are as a people. I think the answer is that Judaism has something other than history. Our keyword is memory. Zachor is the word in Hebrew. Memory. The Torah uses the word zachor, remember, in one form or another, an astonishing 169 times. Remember the Shabbat. Zachor. Remember the day you stood at Mount Sinai. Zachor, remember that you were slaves in Egypt. Zachor, remember. There's a huge difference between history and memory. History is what happened to someone else. Memory is what happened to me, my experience. History, his story. His story. History is his story. Memory. Memory is my story. History is someone else's story. It's about events that happened somewhere else, in some other time, to someone else. Memory is my story. It's the story in which I play a part. I received my story from my parents, who received it from their parents, going all the way back to the dawn of history. This is what makes Pesach so special. It's not history. It's a living memory. The Haggadah is a family album. If we had pictures, it would be pictures. And many Haggadahs even go back to the time before there was anything in color. In a world that was all black and white, the Haggadahs were often illustrated in color. If we had pictures, the Haggadah would be filled with the family album. It's a family album. It's not a history book. There was somebody of a various religion that was once having a conversation with me in the airport, and I didn't have the heart to just say, please go back to reading your book. And this person was going on and on and on and on about their relationship with the Bible and how the Bible changed their life and how important and da-da-da-da-da. And then after They're literally basically talking to themselves for about 10 minutes. They turn to me and say, "And what's your relationship to the Bible?" And I smile and I say, "That's my family photo book. Those are my ancestors. Those are my people. I come from them. And I'm honored that I can share with my children that they come from greatness. And it's a book that I don't have to have a relationship to, because it has a relationship to me." Think about it for a second. Have you ever gone to a history class where the professor pulls out a bitter herb matzah sandwich? I mean, I just want to say this because it was supposed to be a shawarma. It was supposed to be lamb, the paschal sacrifice, with maror and a nice laffa around it. It would have been a beautiful, it's the original shawarma. But instead, what do we get? Instead of getting the burger, we are eating the bun and the mustard. But that said, have you ever gone to a history class where the professor pulls out a bitter herb matzah sandwich? Of course not. Because a professor teaches history. Seder is multisensory. It's memory. That's why it needs to be part of all the senses. The matzah, the maror, the charoset. These are family heirlooms. They're souvenirs from our stay in Egypt. Memory moves us. Memory inspires us. We cry with the bitter herbs of affliction. We taste the sweet wine of liberation. We live. It is our obligation tonight, on the Seder night. We only have two obligations according to the Torah. Number one, eat matzah. Number two, tell our children the story that happened to us when we left Egypt. I don't know about you. I've never been to Egypt and I have no plan on going. Am I lying to my kids when I say I left Egypt? No. Because I did. Because my father told me he left Egypt. And his father told him that he left Egypt. And his father told me he left Egypt. So what I'm doing is I am sharing a direct connection, a direct line from my great, 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 all the way up, 3,300 years, sharing their story. It is a living memory. It's not someone else's story. It's the story of our family. So my child, I did leave Egypt. And one day you will tell your child that you left Egypt. There's other more Kabbalistic and spiritual elements to it as well. We all have an Egypt within us. Mitzrayim means limitation. There's a part of us that limits us from achieving our potential. So we say to our children, you can do anything. Don't let the world stop you. Don't let Egypt stop you. Don't be enslaved to your smartphones. Don't be enslaved to popular culture. Don't be enslaved to groupthink. Be a free and independent thinker. That's why tonight our entire focus is going to be about asking questions. Because I want to share with you what my parents shared with me and their parents shared with them. The power of independent and critical thought. In a world that, my golly, needs it more than ever before. History. History is information. Memory is identity. Without memory, identity vanishes. So just as it is with an individual, so it is with a people. A nation, a people, have a strong identity as long as they remember where they came from and who their ancestors are and what they stood for. So tonight, each of the four cups we raise are going to be an act of memory, an act of commitment. The story we tell is not yet done. It begins with our ancestors 15 Seder tables ago, and it continues with us here now. We remember not out of curiosity or nostalgia, but because it's our turn to add to the story. It's now our job to add a page in the family storybook. Not his story, my story. My parents added their page. My grandparents added their page. And now it's my turn. And one day, my children, you will add your page too. And so, come. Let us begin the Seder. Let us add our own contribution to the destiny of our people.
Are you tired of swiping right on every dating app out there and still getting nowhere?
Are you convinced that you'll forever be alone, surrounded by nothing but cats and empty takeout containers?
Hi, I'm Aliza Ben Shalom, the host of the new show, Jewish Matchmaking, which you can find on Netflix.
And I'm the Love Rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Bernath, and we're inviting you to join us for Matchmaker Matchmaker.
Each week, we'll answer one of your pressing relationship questions, from how to get over your ex to how to deal with your partner's annoying habits.
So if you're ready to laugh, cry, or maybe even find love, then tune in to Matchmaker Matchmaker, and it's available now wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Passover Seder, the actual telling of the story, begins with a fascinating narrative. We say, this is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in Egypt. Let all who are hungry come and eat with us. The holiday of freedom begins when we teach our children to transform our past affliction into concern and sharing with others. When the Jews, when our ancestors were released from Egypt slavery, the Torah says, you shall not wrong a stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Because you were oppressed in Egypt, learned from it not to oppress the stranger, the orphan, or the widow. We could have derived an entirely different lesson from slavery. Think about all of the peoples who have been enslaved and live with a victim mentality. Think about people who haven't been enslaved, who live with a victim mentality. Having suffered so much, they could have felt compelled to inflict suffering on others. This has happened many times in history. Their motto could have become, do unto others before they do unto you. But the Seder begins with the opposite approach to suffering. The Seder calls us to transcend victimhood This is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in Egypt. Let all who are hungry come and eat with us. Judaism wants us both as individuals and as a nation to use pain as a springboard for good. A woman in Manhattan named Henrietta Sold learned that a man she loved for years had planned to marry and abruptly gone off and married a younger woman he had just met. Sold was no longer young, and she knew she would not find a husband. A lesser woman in her situation would have withdrawn from the world, and rightfully so. Pity, anger, wallow in despair. How can this happen? What did I do? Blame God? But instead of wallowing in despair, Zold channeled her love into good deeds, and she founded Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization, which over the course of decades has inspired millions of Jewish women to perform great deeds of love, including saving the lives of children in Nazi-occupied Europe and founding one of the world's leading medical centers in Jerusalem. Unable to find a man with whom to share her love, to heal her wounded soul, and unwilling to see that tremendous love go to waste, she built a worldwide organization to dispense love and healing. When she died, she was buried on the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem. And today, if you go to visit her grave, it reads, Mother of Thousands. Henrietta tasted the bread of affliction and rejection, but stayed resilient and said, Kol dichvin, whoever is in need, I will help. I will bring blessing into this world. That is a message that in our own words, in our own way, we can share with so many others. Don't victimize yourself. Turn your victimhood into blessing. And share. Share the freedom. It's so easy to have self-pity. It's so easy today to say, oh, poor me. Oh, nobody remembered my birthday. No. Turn your birthday into an opportunity to be a blessing to the world and to others, to be a mother of thousands. You know why no one remembered your birthday? Because they're dealing with so much crap that they can't even see their head above water. So take your opportunity of your birthday and share blessing and love. It's a moment to give. Somehow, I don't know when this happened, but somehow somebody decided that we all have to be on the receiving end. What are you going to do for me? What are you going to give to me? I need a gift. The greatest receiving is giving. And if you've never experienced that level of receiving, you've never experienced anything in your life. Because that is the greatest receiving. Whoever is hungry, let them come and eat. That is true celebration. That was just one example of one part of the Seder. Each part of our Seder is filled with so much meaning, so much true living memory. And that's our job on the Seder night, to share this, to pass the torch, to pass the light. So Hashem should bless each and every one of you, that you should continue to pass the torch of living memory. Feel it with your heart and with your soul, and share it so others feel it too with their hearts and their souls. And together, may we live because of our actions and because of the Almighty God. May we live in a time that's truly full of peace. May we be able to sit around the Seder together, holding hands, white and black, Israeli and Palestinian, Russian and Ukrainian, Chinese and Taiwanese, and all the people who think that they're different. May we all remember through our own actions that we are all the same. We are all God's children. And Hashem should bless us that we should be able to enter a time of true, absolute peace. And may that time be today. Hi, Rabbi Bernath here. I have some great news for you. My popular 4-week course, Kabbalah for Everyone, is available right now for free for the next 50 people who download it. All you have to do is go to www.theloverabbi.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and you're going to see the download button right there. In this course, I talk about the Kabbalistic secrets to relationships, to wealth, to happiness, and balance. This special offer has been dedicated in loving memory of Elie Dorfman. I look forward to hearing from you and hope you enjoy the course. Now on to today's episode.